Do conferences get you down? Are keynotes just the worst? Is the hallway track really the one that you're interested in? Well, then you want to stick around for today's episode of Floss Weekly, where we talk to Christoph Zimmermann about Linux Beer Wanderung. Floss Weekly is brought to you from LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple. Check out lastpass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly with Jonathan Bennett, episode 568, recorded March 4th, 2020. Linux Beer Wanderung. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by LastPass. From access to authentication to passwords, LastPass manages every entry point to your business so you can mitigate risk while improving employee productivity. Visit lastpass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. And by Melissa. Bad data happens to good companies. That's why 10,000 businesses count on Melissa for clean, reliable address data. Get started today with 25,000 records cleaned for free. That's a $75 value at melissa.com/twit. Hello, it's time for Floss Weekly. I am Jonathan Bennett, coming to you this week with news stories, open source software, things that you're not using and you should be using, things you're already using. As you might notice, I am not Randall Schwartz. Sadly, Randall is under the weather again today and will not be able to join us. They found a replacement at the last minute. That would be me. And we're going to do our best to soldier on and have a show without him. This week, we have a really, really cool guest we've had before, Dr. Christoph Zimmermann. And he has an interesting, well, it's not really a project. It's a conference. No, they describe it as an unconference. And I am not going to be able to pronounce the conference, unconference name, Linux Beer Wanderung. It's German. I do not speak German. I took Spanish in high school instead of German. But anyway, we're going to talk to him about that today. Let's see, doing a solo show, I don't have my normal partner to banter with, so I think we're going to dive in. Before we talk about Linux and unconferences and talk to Dr. Christoph, though, I do have an important announcement to bring. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by LastPass. Securing every access point in your business is critical, but it's challenging for IT to improve security without impacting employee productivity. LastPass provides you with a balance of strong security that's also easy for your employees to use and manage. With LastPass, employees benefit from a solution that's easy to use while IT maintains control over every login. LastPass offers multiple solutions for businesses. LastPass Identity unifies password management, single sign-on, and biometric multi-factor authentication into one single solution. Adaptive Authentication combines biometrics and contextual intelligence to prove a user's identity with a variety of flexible MFA, that's multi-factor authentication, options. Eliminate passwords. Leverage biometrics and integrations to streamline access to work applications without ever having to type a password. Secure every access point. We're not just talking about wireless access points. We're talking about web applications, workstations, VPNs. Manage every access point in your business. You can deploy it instantly. LastPass Identity offers over 1,200 pre-integrated SSO applications to get users up and running quickly. Granular control without the hassle. You can leverage over 100 policies to manage users at the app, individual, group, or even organizational level to customize access and authentication requirements. And LastPass goes above and beyond to ensure security for all of its users. Your data is encrypted and decrypted at the device level. Your master password, the keys used to encrypt and decrypt data, are never sent to LastPass servers, are never accessible by LastPass. As the gold standard, they've engaged trusted, world-class third-party security firms to conduct routine audits and testing of their service and infrastructure. And we use LastPass here at TWiT. I've used LastPass for years and years. I use it with my wife to be able to manage our business logins, our personal logins. That way we can both get access to what we need. LastPass is great. Increased security doesn't have to be complex. LastPass makes identity and access management simple for IT to manage and easy for employees to use. If you're not a corporation, if you're not doing it as an employee, it's still great for you. Go check it out. Start your journey today by visiting lastpass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. That's lastpass.com/twit. And we thank LastPass for sponsoring Floss Weekly. And now it's time. Let's bring Christoph, Dr. Christoph, actually, to the show. Welcome.
Hi, Jonathan. How are things?
Things are good. Today is a little different than I expected it to be, but that's okay. We're gonna go on. How are you, sir?
No worries. We're going to swing this. First of all, please, Jonathan, don't drop the doctor. Otherwise, I have Randall calling me to give him some advice on medical issues, which I can't because I'm not a quack. I'm just a doctor. That's all.
Not that kind of doctor?
No, I'm afraid not.
Oh, well. All right. So what is, first off, how do we pronounce this? Linux Beer Wanderung? Yeah. Is that anywhere close?
That's pretty close, yeah. Actually, it's Linux Bier Wanderung, which is a German term and translates into Linux Beer Hike, essentially.
And now we understand why Randall was calling this a pub crawl.
Yes, pubs are a somewhat important part of the whole thing, but not just pubs. It's just much more than just crawling from pub to pub. It's rather a week of fun, open source projects, as well as meet new people and rejuvenating old friendships, I'm tempted to say.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that when you think about kind of the open source world and these big projects, and even you think about conferences, one of the big things that happens, one of the important things that happens is when people get to talk to each other one-on-one. And, you know, they get to know the face behind the email address or the face behind the username. So I think it's great to have different events where people can do that.
Absolutely. The whole thing is 21 years old this year. It's the 21st iteration of Linux Beer Wanderung. The whole thing developed in 1999 when a couple of people decided to, yes, leave the beaten conference path or track, if you will, and do something different. So in contrast to Scale or other open source conference like FOSDEM or whatever, it's a week long. It's not a conference. It's pretty much organized by the community. It's essentially picking a town. This is done by scouts, and I reckon we're going to go into the details in a minute or two. Then people register, look after their own accommodation, look after their own travel arrangements. And the scout is just in charge of securing a location, the famously known hall, and the rest is pretty much up to the community, as well as organizing activities. Doesn't have to be open source. Can be anything from hiking to kind of brewing even beer. At stages, we had this too, all right? And then the whole thing is basically closed off for a given day or on a given day, let's put it this way, with something called the POTD, the pub of the day. And this is actually a gathering place for people after the day has finished to come together to have something to eat, to share stories, to swap news, and then also to prepare the next day. And of course, to have a little bit of fun. And this is the most important thing of this week. It's just about conveying knowledge and meeting new people and making new friends, but rather having a lot of fun while doing it.
The one conference that I've been to, yes, I really hit the conference scene. The one conference that I've been to and actually got to speak at was over in Dublin. A great experience several years ago. The presentations were great. You know, the keynote was great, but probably the coolest thing about that conference was the night after, when everybody got shuttled over to the pub where they rented out the upper floor, and you know there were snacks and the beer was on tap and free, and everybody just sat around and talked, and you know you got to meet people, you got to actually talk about projects. Sounds like what you guys have done is you said, that's really the good part of conferences. We're just going to cut all the rest of it out. Is that what happened?
that's actually spot on, because for example, there is no fixed agenda. There is no tracks. There is no kind of proposals for presentations. There's a central registration site where people can put up suggestions for activities. And as I said, these can be anything. And then people can join these activities or register for them. And then if there's enough people coming together, people just go for it.
Mm-hmm. I'm about to make a joke that references U.S. laws. I'm not sure how familiar you are with those, but LBW is now old enough to legally drink.
Absolutely. This between you and me, right? We have been drinking since day one, as in 21 years ago, but don't tell anybody. Exactly. No, I mean, the B stands for beer. Although that wasn't the initial driver behind the project, it has kind of socializing and the consumption of certain intoxicating liquids have always been a somewhat important part of the whole affair. Hence, we do have kids, but they need to be with parental guidance at all times.
Right. And I guess we should, we're joking around and having fun, but we should put a point on this. Even if somebody chooses not to partake of alcohol, someone is a teetotaler, I'm sure certainly welcome to come and hang out and enjoy the unconference as well, right?
Absolutely, especially for the first 5 minutes. No, I'm only joking. No, needless to say, anybody is welcome. It doesn't have to be beer drinking in the evenings. We make sure that, for example, when we pick the POTDs, we make sure that they do serve soft drinks, that they do serve at least one vegan option, one vegetarian option, just in case we have people with certain dietary restrictions as part of the week. That is pretty important because we are open to what's it called again? Gay, lesbian, transgender communities. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, we have quite a few people who are transsexual in the community. So we cater for all backgrounds. And I think this is pretty important for the whole format because we don't want to exclude anybody just because of gender bias, background, whatever.
That's one of the things I love about open source. And really, I think open source is probably the place where this is the purest. There's been all kinds of political going back and forth in the last few years, but you even look back further than that. And open source for so long has been about, we don't care about any of that stuff. Just show us the code. If you write good code, then you're in. If you want to be a part of the community, you're in. And I just think that's a beautiful thing about open source is that it tries very hard not to get off into the political weeds in any one direction. So that's great.
Perfect. I couldn't agree more, Jonathan.
So 21 years ago, tell us about that first event, that first unconference. What did it look like 21 years ago? What was kind of the spark that brought it together?
I can only kind of tell you from history because I wasn't around then. Let's put it this way: I joined the movement in 2011. That was my first Linux Beer Wanderung. 21 years ago, I think the people congregated in a small Bavarian village because some people knew each other then already and then decided we have to have something off the beaten conference track. So a scout team was formed. They picked the location. They also secured, as I said, a hall. And let me spend a couple of minutes on what a hall actually is. Mm-hmm. Each and every Linux Beer Wanderung has a hall. The hall is the base camp, the central gathering point for the whole week. Sometimes it's even a makeshift hall. For example, last year we had a pretty much impromptu, let's put it this way, LBW. And there a participant actually volunteered his home to be the ad hoc hall, if you will. So we secured a little bit of space in his place to ensure that the people had a place together. So the hall essentially ideally is equipped with a kitchen, meaning we can cook there. So a potluck evening is when a kitchen is available, normally a part of the schedule, i.e. people from different countries, from different ethnic backgrounds come together and cook their own dishes in that particular kitchen and then serve that to the participants. And even when there's not a kitchen available, we have to make do without one. In that case, it'll be just a POTD, as in a pub of the day. So, but much more importantly, the hall has to be big enough for the participants. We have to have, or we normally have, some sort of big fat pipe running into the place. For example, this year, the LBW takes place in Kronberg, which is just a small hamlet just outside of Frankfurt. And as a matter of fact, I'm this year's LBW organizer, so I made sure that we have a 400 megabit downstream connectivity running into the hall, because if you, for example, do hackathons and the like, you need that sort of internet connectivity. So the hall has to have a couple of, let's put it this way, prereqs. It has to be big enough to cater for the participants. It has to be big enough to have a couple of tables where basically laptops can be put on. As I said, connectivity is pretty important. And perhaps a whiteboard of sorts or some other medium to scribble things upon. And of course, tables and chairs, and that's pretty much it. So this is the hall.
Sure. And so I guess I asked the wrong question then, if you weren't there 21 years ago. Tell us about your first LBW. How did you hear about it? And what was kind of the what was the thing that made you say, oh, this is something I've got to go to?
That's a very good question, Jonathan. When I was kind of looking at Tux, as in 2011, I think I came across it in a magazine called Linux Magazine, which I don't know if it's still around, or was it Linux Journal? I can't even remember. I think it was Linux Magazine, doesn't matter anyway. And there they had a regular feature, basically a summary of each year. And a journalist basically described the overall format, what they did, and the highlights of the week. And that really drew my attention to it, meaning that this mixture, let's put it this way, of an informal gathering, meeting new people, as well as having the possibility of doing hackathons and also kind of getting down your hands and getting your hands dirty with coding, that really appealed to me. Mm-hmm. Plus, the scenery was pretty nice because Tux is in the Alps. So it's a little, I think, town in Austria, if I'm not completely mistaken. The town had about 1,500 inhabitants, I think, which is the ideal size for an LBW, because there are a couple of ground rules that go with an LBW. I think the most important one is that the hamlet, as a location where the hall is, has to be small enough that you can cross it in a decent amount of time, either on two or four legs, depending on your level of intoxication, let's put it this way. You have to be able to find your way home no matter what.
Oh, that's an unexpected but understandable turn of phrase. Oh, was there more to that answer, or did I cut you off by laughing?
No, that's okay. There are a couple of other rules. For example, as I said, the hall is a prereq. Without a hall, an LBW doesn't really make sense. And something that we're introducing this year, the hamlet has to have decent public transport available. So when I scouted for the location, I made sure that this prereq is being met. We have a couple of commuter trains running into Kronberg, as well as a couple of bus lines, meaning that even if people choose to fly into Frankfurt, they are in Kronberg within 45 minutes max using public transport, meaning you don't have to hire a car. As a matter of fact, we are shifting more and more towards environment-friendly things in terms of if there are cars, they are normally shared, so that people who bring cars can take other people to somewhat, say, remote activities. This year, Kronberg also has the advantage of being pretty close to Frankfurt and Wiesbaden, which are two, I'm almost tempted to say, big cities in the south of Hesse, as in the federal state, basically, where Kronberg is located in Germany. So meaning that even if you are doing some sort of remote activity, there are always means to get there, even using public transport. That's pretty important for us.
And so you've a bunch of things you mentioned I want to dig into. First off, the first one you went to was named Tux?
Tux. Hintertux is actually a small village in Austria.
I'm humored by this because of the connection to Tux, the Linux mascot. And when you said that, I was like, wait, what?
I spoke to the scout about this, and she said, because Heike Jurczyk, who was the scout at the time, organized this, and she thought at the time it had a nice ring to it, and this is the reason I think why, to some extent, Tux was also chosen. Needless to say, Tux being the mascot of Linux, that was a perfect fit.
You mentioned hackathons. Like, what sorts of things are we hacking on? Is this hardware projects? Is that hacking on software? And then is this something where the people that that put the program together choose what's going to be hacked on, or do they kind of just come about organically?
That's exactly it. Whatever people want to do, it's up to them to organize this and then to come up with the form and come up with the contents. So, for example, there's a current lore in the community that parts of NF tables, which is probably better known as IP tables, was developed about 15 years ago, maybe more, at an LBW, and then what later developed into IP tables was then kind of laid the foundation for at an LBW. So the hackathons, if there are any, can be quite technical. But then we also had some beginners courses like how to program in Python, that sort of thing. So it's a mixed bag. And again, the community is pretty much in charge of what they want to do and what the week should look like. So if we have people who are new to Python, they might even put up a request saying, now look, if there are any more experienced Python programmers at the LBW, let's do an intro workshop. What is Python all? What Python's all about, and the ecosystem, all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. It's really up to the community.
And about how many folks do you have that show up to these?
Interesting question. It depends, I reckon, on the level of publicity we put into the whole thing. I'm only joking. But the majority of the participants would be hardcore LBWers, meaning they go back at least 10 to 15 years, but we have new people joining all the time. So there have been kind of small LBWs. For example, Luxembourg was a rather small one in 2015. I think we had about only 20 participants. But there are also big LBWs where the overall number of participants really pushes kind of 30 plus. It really depends on how many people show up, and who can make it. Of course, the one thing to consider is actually it's normally around the summertime. Meaning that it can be either June, July, or August. This year, unfortunately, is kind of at the end of September. And especially if people want to bring kids, they normally have to align this to school holidays. Now, sometimes, as it is the case, for example, in southern Germany, sometimes these school holidays are pretty late in the summer. For example, Bavaria as well as Baden-Württemberg, both have their school holidays at the end of August or the second half of August. So given the fact that they are only off for 6 weeks, they can normally squeeze this in. Of course, that only goes for people who have kids. The other ones are probably freer in their choices of taking a vacation, because yes, you can join for a couple of days, but you only get to experience the real spirit, I think, if you are there from Sunday when the whole thing opens until Saturday, when we kind of sweep the courses out of the hall, figuratively speaking, of course. There have been no dead bodies yet.
Well, that's reassuring. Do you have quite a few kids that come to it, that people bring their kids?
It depends on the year. The first one I joined, that was, as I said, in 2011, we had about, I think, at least 6 or 7 kids, if not more. A very good friend of mine who I met at that particular first LBW, we've really grown very close over the years, had his 4 kids with him. So what they did is they rented a whole apartment for the week where they all stayed. And the benefit of this apartment was that it was actually within walking distance from the hall. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't that hard for them to go back. But then at that stage, most of the kids were not really of legal age to drink. Not sure if that really deterred them from drinking. But it's basically, this is what people basically do. They take a look at who's coming and the overall number of kids that are going to be there, and then they probably make a call of whether to bring kids along or not. There can be quite a few, but then we also had years where there were no kids at all.
Mm-hmm. You guys do things like organize activities for the kids as well? Well, I know some kids, I can imagine them getting in on the hacking from a pretty young age, too.
Absolutely. It all depends, you see. For example, when we did the one in, in Peak District, the name escapes me, Castleton, exactly. Castleton, we had quite a few Raspberry Pis with us. And then these kids set up a whole server farm running essentially Minecraft on these Raspberry Pis. And that was pretty amazing because it was a project where they just had these pies and then put together almost like a cluster of sorts of distributed Minecraft servers and then playing on these on these networks. And they did it all from scratch essentially. And I think once you've done this, it's a lot of fun, not just for the adults, but also for the kids, because they get to learn a lot, and B, they have then the possibility of doing kind of LAN battles and kind of playing Minecraft in a very distributed fashion.
Mm-hmm. Thinking back to my experiences as a youngster like that, I remember the first time that I met somebody else that was, I'll put it in quotes, like me, another geek, somebody that got it, that was into programming and all of those things, and just kind of the breakthrough moment that is. That's really awesome to be able to give these young people that moment where they meet somebody else that's into it. That's really cool.
Absolutely. In the same spirit, I mean, if you take kids as an example, of course, they would be new to this whole open source thing. But quite a few people actually discovered the nature of open source, as well as especially Linux, in LBW. Maybe they had a friend. I already got in a handful of comments, let's put it this way, from people that I know from a local LARC that I happen to run or to support, who said, oh, it's going to be close to Frankfurt. Now let's see. I have quite a few colleagues at work that might be really interested in this open source topic. Let's see if I can drag them along.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's an unexpected way to do open source evangelism, I suppose.
Well, yes, to some extent, and absolutely. At the end of the day, it's all about the world revolution, right, and how to win it.
Right. Everything
as
must Brandon be open source.
Go ahead.
Oh no, if you had more to add on that, go ahead.
Yes, there was just a. Well, on this particular topic, slightly derailing here, there was a report published by Red Hat this week. Was it last week? About the adoption of open source in enterprise. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can put this into show notes. I'm more than happy to send you the link. But if you take a close look at the figures, of course, the report might be slightly biased because we're talking Red Hat here, but the trend that I clearly see, and this is my experience as well, the proprietary software is on the way out on a global scale in enterprise because more and more enterprises adopt open source left, right, and center. Meaning that in contrast to say 10 or 15 years ago, open source has become one of the cornerstones of the overall IT strategy of a given enterprise. Mm-hmm. And if we can do our own bit from an LBW perspective to foster this, by all means, we do have quite a few enterprise participants coming from an enterprise background, And some of them actually introduced open source at their place of work and have been fostering this for quite some time.
Yeah, it's an interesting transition that's happened over the years, from way back in the old days. Well, first off, nobody had heard of open source, and then finally people got the idea, and everybody was very skeptical of it. And nowadays, I had a conversation with somebody not too very long ago, and he used the word proprietary to describe a piece of software, and by the term proprietary, he meant terrible and really hard to work with. And I just kind of smiled on the inside. I'm like, well, he's not wrong.
Exactly. I mean, just take a look at the adoption of enterprise distributions in any company. Even the SMEs are discovering this, as in the small and medium enterprises. Doesn't have to be the likes of BASF, of Bayer, of Walmart and the likes, or Home Depot.
I mean, in my day job, I've gotten a couple of people moved over to Linux on desktops just because they're tired of getting viruses. I say, I can help with that. If you're willing to put up with maybe this quirk or this piece of software that doesn't work very well, I can help with that. Let's put Linux on your desktop, and one or two people have gone for it and really like it. So I mean, it's definitely something that can be done. It's definitely something that's getting traction.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about real briefly the end of the LBW. I've got a note here that says, "What happens after a POTD closes?"
This is an interesting question. It depends on the landlord of the pub of the day in question, I suppose, because some of the places are really open very late. Some of them, especially in the kind of more rural areas where we have done LBWs, tend to close early. So after that, it's either back to the hall or people making their own arrangement in terms of where to go next. For example, I intend to plan a pub crawl, including a certain set of microbreweries in Frankfurt, meaning the intention is to introduce the participants to the finer aspects of craft beers. And there are quite a few places as a microbreweries in Frankfurt, but also places that just focus on selling craft beer. So the idea is to take a train from Kronberg into Frankfurt and then visit these places one by one, and then get them back to Kronberg either with the first train in the morning or with the last commuter rail that runs, I think, around 1 or 2 a.m. It really depends. Unless people want to stay in Frankfurt, but then that's their own choice, and they're more than happy to do so. Again, this is kind of community driven, so everybody decides for themselves. Let's put it this way. If that answers the question,
I think so. And Christoph, I enjoy talking with you. We'll get back to some questions here in just a minute, but I do have a real quick announcement. We got to pay the bills just a little bit, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by the leader in address verification, Melissa. Every address is covered from Adelaide, Australia to Zipaquira, Colombia, and everywhere in between. We all know there's nothing good about bad data. It costs money, hurts sales, and decreases customer satisfaction. If bad addresses, duplicate records, and bouncing emails are hurting your business, isn't it time to come clean with Melissa? Delta Faucet, Z1 Motorsports, and Car2Go all use Melissa. You should too. Delta Faucet was able to improve their call center process with global address autocompletion. Melissa was able to reduce the fraudulent e-commerce transactions for Z1 Motorsports by 90%. Melissa provides a full spectrum of data quality protection for your customer data. You can verify postal addresses, mobile numbers, and email addresses. Update the addresses of customers that have moved and eliminate duplicate records. Gain additional customer insight into your data with Melissa's analytics. Easily build address verifications and customer data validations into your custom application using Melissa's APIs, CRM cloud connectors, and e-commerce plugins, or upload your customer file for a quick data cleanse. Melissa is serious about securely managing your data. They continually undergo independent security audits to reinforce their commitment to data security, privacy, and compliance requirements. They're SOC 2, HIPAA, and GDPR compliant. Mailers spend about $20 billion annually in undeliverable mail. Don't lose customers or cash. Make every address count. And if in the United States, at least, if you want to avoid sending mail to that poor little farm in the middle of Kansas that blank GPS addresses show to, go with Melissa. I'm sure they check for that, too. Bad data happens to good companies. That's why 10,000 organizations worldwide trust Melissa to get their customer data clean and accurate. Get started today with 25,000 records clean for free. It's a $75 value at melissa.com/twit. That's melissa.com/TWIT or call 1-800-MELISSA to find out more. And we thank Melissa for their sponsorship of Floss Weekly. All right, Christoph, let's see. Where were we? What all went into the decision-making process as far as where to hold the LBW this year?
It's quite straightforward. At the end of a previous LBW, people get together and then a dice is being rolled, I'm tempted to say, or whoever leaves room last, let's put it this way, is in charge of scouting. I'm joking. There's a Telegram group. There is a mailing list. There's also a website, actually. The address is linuxbierwanderung.com, but we do have also websites for the individual annual LBWs, and the one for Kronberg is actually monochromec.com/LBW2020. If this is too fast, remember, just go to the Wikipedia page and look for this year's LBW at Kronberg, and you'll find the website promoting this event with all the details you may need. But coming back to your original question, Jonathan, normally what we decide after an LBW is to do it next in terms of pick a country and then have a couple of people volunteering to do the scouting so that we are in a position to lock down the hall as early as the beginning of the year, because that leaves us just about six to eight months to lock down the final details, as in securing the contract for the hall to do the promotion around the event, and then also for people to make up their minds, apply for a vacation at their workplace, make the travel arrangements, all the rest of it. So signing the hall normally takes place around December, January timeframe, that sort of thing. And at that stage, the scouting should have been done already. Needless to say, this is theory. In practice, sometimes things happen later, especially last year, because we didn't have that many volunteers looking for a place. Somebody from the community stepped up and said, now look, I just moved here to southern England. Actually, as a matter of fact, it was South Shropshire, if I'm completely mistaken. More than happy to open my doors for the community for a week, and then let's have it here. Because time was running low, and there wasn't really a hall booked or a place scouted. So somebody just stepped in and volunteered for this week in August of last year.
So that's interesting, because LBW seems, at least to me, looking at your record, it seems to be a very Europe-focused event. Going to the UK was actually a little outside of the comfort zone, wasn't it?
Yes, Brexit was already on the horizon. but it was just finalized as of, I think, end of February this year. So no jokes aside. If you take a look at the Wikipedia page, you'll see that the event rotates around Europe. So there was place in Poland. There was a couple of places in Germany. UK and Ireland have been featuring on the map quite a lot, but also Greece, France, and other locations. It's really down to the volunteering team, as in who's going to do the scouting, to pick a place and then make sure that the local arrangements, which are actually quite minimal because it's just essentially putting together the information like an FAQ, and securing the hall, and that's about it, because the rest is done by the community. Mm-hmm. And then we have an LBW. So this is the reason why you'll see this rotating Europe quite a lot. yes, of course, it's an international event, so it's not just German, it's not just English people participating. People come from Belgium, we have quite a strong Czech presence in the community. People come from as far as Canada, even, as in the real communist countries in Northern America. The one with poor health systems and public transport systems.
Hey, we have a public transport system in my town.
You're this is terrible.
Floss Weekly is not a political show, dang it.
I'm always tempted to ask if you live in Boston, as in the communist coast, but we're going to leave that for another day. Sorry, no political statements. Yes, I get it.
Go on.
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay. I was going to ask if you get many people from outside of Europe, but it sounds like you get at least a few. What about somebody that's, say, living in the United States and doesn't quite have the ability to travel to Europe for a week-long conference? What options do we poor Americans have?
Set up your own LBW. Simple as that. Get somebody to do the scouting. I mean, I think the formula is GPL license. So just fork it, set up a website, and off you go. No, jokes aside, there is no copyright. There's no trademark on LBW. It's a community event. So, and this is the spirit of open source, right? Take the format, take the event, tune it, improve it, and roll your own.
Mm-hmm. You have an idea of how many people have done that? How many LBW forks there are out there?
As far as I know, none.
Really?
At least I haven't come across it yet, unless you know some people in the States who run a similar format and can trace their roots back to an LBW. I don't have a recollection of things basically happening in the US for that matter, because the big commercial formats like Scale and all the rest of them, A, there would be conference and they would be just for a couple of days or a weekend, but not a week long. And I can't even recall major unconferences in the US. For example, in Europe, we have something called OCCamp. I don't know if that rings a bell.
Yes.
If you know Dan Lynch, you know OCCamp, right? So,
I think you were talking about just the United States. Are there any forks of LBW anywhere in the world?
Not as far as I know, because the Europe one is the only one that I can recall.
Oh, well, I think we need to get busy on this.
Yes, there might be more, but maybe I'm just not aware of them. That's all.
Well, it sounds like something that Floss Weekly listeners and maybe I myself need to get busy on, because this sounds like a really interesting, interesting event to try to hold. And obviously it's a bit problematic for a lot of us that it's only in Europe. And so having some of these in different continents seems like the way to go.
Absolutely. If there's anything that Europe, as in the community here, can do to support this, just feel free to reach out and get in touch. More than happy to share the mistakes that were made, the few ones, but also basically how these communities work and what to take into consideration when selecting a hall and all the rest of it. Especially given the fact that we cater for all sorts of walks of life. This whole inclusion thing for us is very important. And I reckon whoever wants to fork an LBW should make sure that, because of the reasons you mentioned early on, that this whole fork would be inclusive as well, because that rolls with the overall open source spirit, right?
Certainly. So I have a note here that I'm supposed to ask you about Linux in-laws. What is this?
Somebody spread the words already. Okay. Yes. Linux in-laws. What do you know about Linux outlaws?
I know it is, we'll say, the other open source podcast.
It was a podcast, I think, that vanished in 2014, 2015, something like this. Mm-hmm. A guy called Fabian Scharschel and, of course, Dan Lynch were behind it. then some things happened and the whole thing came to a halt, unfortunately. So a friend of mine and myself decided to revive this whole thing, and but not call it Linux Outlaws, but rather call it Linux Inlaws. So we are just about to release off the third episode of the first season. It's on Hacker Public Radio, as in this is the place where you can find the first two episodes of season one. Essentially, it's a podcast similar to Linux Outlaws on all things open source. Not just the technology, but also the philosophy behind it, the community, of course, and even pushing the Linux Outlaws boundaries further. The idea is not just to do it kind of in a more technically non-humoristic fashion, but rather add humor to the whole thing. And the blacker the humor is, the better. if you take a look at the second episode, for example, don't miss out teaser. Don't miss out on the last 3 minutes of the episode. And of course, it's in contrast to Linux Outlaws. It's essentially a community podcast. So we are open to suggestions from the community regarding the format, regarding the content. So if people want to hear about, for example, topics like open source licensing beyond Simon Phipps, I might add, or other topics, feel free to get in touch. The website is linuxoutlaws.eu. Yes, it's a European top-level domain. And the email address is feedback@linuxinlaws.eu. But you'll find all this information on the website, as in linuxinlaws.eu, and of course on Hacker Public Radio. Shout out, by the way, to Hacker Public Radio. Ken and friends, you're doing an excellent job. Never mind what people say about you. We love you.
Sounds like fun. You have to see if you can get old Lynchy Dan himself to come and be a guest on it someday. He'll probably go for it. He loves that kind of stuff.
This is Martin Visser, who's the other guy who's doing the podcast with me, and myself. I've already been thinking about this in terms of what guests to bring on in future episodes. And Dan, and of course Fab, if he wants to. Fab, if you're listening, you're more than happy to get in touch. They're more than welcome to be on that show.
All right, very cool. Well, we're actually running kind of short on time, and so I want to ask first off, is there anything that you're just burning to talk about that we didn't ask about?
Almost. As I said, free whoever's listening to fork the format. If you need advice on how not to do things, on how to do things, please feel free to get in touch. And the best of luck with your own version of the forked LBW. Yes, we are thinking about including Bitcoin in the format. It basically boils down to the participants in order to preempt a question. I reckon that is coming up. It boils down to the participants to select a related project. That is going to be done during the week.
You triggered something in my mind. What's the cost for this? Who pays for this? Do you guys have a big corporate sponsor that helps pays for it all?
We don't. As a matter of fact, the costs are quite minimal because what participants essentially pay for is just the cost, the shared costs of the hall. And normally you're looking at a couple of euros for the week, and more people join, of course, the lesser there are the expenses, because each and every participant is in charge of making their own travel arrangements, meaning that there is no central accommodation booking. Quite a few people camp, quite a few people go for holiday homes like Airbnb and stuff, and this is the reason why we especially are not providing a central accommodation booking service, because it's highly individualistic and everybody wants to do their own thing. And that's the whole spirit of the week. That's the reason why we decided specifically against providing such a service. So whether you want to book a flight, whether you want to take a train, this is basically up to you. You also look after your own accommodation. The website, of course, and you'll see this actually on the screen right now, the website, of course, promoting the annual event, like the one promoting Kronberg this year, has detailed directions on of how to get there. Even if you are for the few extraterrestrial visitors that are visiting us, you'll find direction on how to get to the solar system and then how to get from our big star to something called Earth. And then you're almost in Kronberg.
Oh, very useful. We actually have a question from the chat room. The Andromedan says, have they created a wiki or web page about do's and don'ts that they have when it comes to organizing and running the conference? So you've talked about you'll be more than willing to share your aggregated knowledge and wisdom about how to do this. Is that actually written down somewhere where we can get to?
Not only for the Andromeda people, but also for the rest of the people listening and watching. No, there isn't, because it's an unconference. So yes, there is a central registration site, but all you have to do basically on this registration site is create an account, and then enter your proposals. And then people will vote for these proposals, especially if you are talking about competing slots in the hall. We normally make sure that we distribute the slots evenly, but in the rare case that there are competing proposals for a single slot, normally the proposal with the majority of the vote basically gets the slot. But as I said, it's a free flow format, so if there's no slot available, simply people venture outside and do it in the grounds. Always an option. But as I said, the whole thing is pretty much community driven. So the idea is not to have strict and fast rules, but rather have the community organize themselves.
So if someone wanted to set up their own LBW in another place, fork it per se, is there a documentation on how to do so? Are there guidelines, the lessons that you guys have learned?
Not in writing, no. But as I said, if you take a look at the mailing list archive, you'll see a lot of discussions tackling particular subjects and how we solve these things.
Okay. So as I'm sure happens in many projects, the mailing list is the ad hoc wiki.
And of course, there's also a Telegram group.
Right, sure. Okay, we are getting down to the end of the show, so I have a couple of questions that I'm required contractually to ask you. What's your favorite text editor that you spend all day in?
Randall, it's still Emacs.
Well, Randall's not here for it, but Emacs, yay! You know, I've tried learning Emacs a couple of times, and I didn't get stuck in it like I did in Vim the first time, but I haven't made any progress with Emacs. What scripting language do you prefer to work in?
It used to be Perl, but we're talking about 20, 30 years back. These days, I'm afraid it's Python more often than not.
Yes, we get that a lot. A lot of people have jumped the fence and gone to the dark side and used Python. But Python 2 or Python 3? I suppose we have Python to ask 3. Now.
Yeah, Python 3, of course, right? Python 2 is dead from a security perspective.
I thought so too, but I've been told that apparently there are a couple of outfits that are talking about picking it up and actually doing security maintenance on it. We'll see if that happens.
Best of luck.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was Doctor, not that kind of doctor, Christoph Zimmermann. Thank you so much for being with us today. Had a blast.
Thank you, and the best of luck, Randall. If you're listening, the best of luck for you, for your health, and get well soon.
Yes, Randall, get well soon. All right. Excellent. And of course, if you have any want to learn more about it, you can go to linuxbeerwanderung.com or just look up the LBW on the on Wikipedia and find all kinds of information there. Let's see. I think this is the part of the show where we talk about upcoming projects. Because we do. We have projects coming up in the next few weeks for Floss Weekly. March 11th, we have NetData, which is an open source real-time network and infrastructure monitoring project. And then on the 18th, we have XS Code. This one's interesting. It's basically a business that gives developers tools to make money off of their open source code. So these guys are trying to answer some of the questions about how do you monetize open source? How do you actually make money from it? And then March 25th, Agones, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, but it is a framework for multiplayer game servers on Kubernetes. So it's designed to let a company that has a video game spin up their servers really easily. F-Droid on April 1st. No, it's not an April Fool's episode. It's F-Droid, which, of course, is an alternative app store for Android, and they only do open source software. And I've worked with these guys at F-Droid before, and they are top-notch. In some ways, run a better app store than Google does. April 8th, Hydra, which I believe is, if I'm not mistaken, that is a Facebook project. It is a framework for elegantly configuring complex applications. April 15th, we have PIMCore, which they describe themselves as a digital experience platform. We'll see what that means. April 22nd, XCP-NG, which is a hypervisor, open source hypervisor based on Zen Server. And then April 29th, we have Contractor, which is a universal API. They've done the heavy lifting. You just have to plug your stuff into it. Sounds pretty interesting. If you have a show, if you are in charge of an open source project, or you know of someone that is and you want a show, have the community coordinator, project lead, someone from the project get a hold of us here at Floss Weekly. Have them email us, and we'll do the scheduling. We'll get it all sorted out. Let's see. I am Jonathan Bennett. You can follow me at JP_Bennett on Twitter. Go check out my weekly security column over at Hackaday.com. We also ran one, if you're listening live, this past Monday on Rubicon, the NSA program where the NSA owned part of a cryptography company after World War II. Super interesting history there. Go check that out. I think that's it. Thank you, everybody, for coming along on this episode of Floss Weekly.